is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulchian, Ford. Bird, Kulchian, Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome into a brand new edition of the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. Also, the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim365 YouTube page, which if you haven't already, please hit that like button and that subscribe button as well. We would certainly appreciate that. But regardless of whether you have done that previously or doing that now, or we'll wait and hold off and hopefully hit that button at some point or later on, we do appreciate you joining us here live 11:15 on Tuesdays on YouTube and the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim365 YouTube page. And then after the fact on all your favorite podcast platforms, I'm Craig Smoak, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, and we got Garrett Ross behind the scenes. And a little mix today as we've got March Madness with the brackets now officially set and spring football also starting up for Dave Aranda and the Bears. So a big Tuesday with a lot of action going on and a lot to unpack. But Grayson, it's not the most wonderful time of the year. I reserve that for, you know, Christmas season and things like that. But in terms of news and action and a nice mix of college football and hoops at its best, this is a pretty nice little time right now for college fans.
Right. I mean, for sports, this is my favorite event all year. I mean, March Madness is here. That's going to be really exciting and fun. I mean, we got to see the bracket. That was done really nicely. So I really enjoyed that. I'm excited to, you know, watch some basketball over this next week or so. And then, of course, spring ball starting. I mean, there's just a lot going on right now, a lot for us to talk about this week, and just a lot to be intrigued by, I think, going into this week and just through the weekend as well.
Yes, well, the Big 12 tournament wrapped. Iowa State, your tournament champions, as they demolished Houston to take the league postseason tourney crown. And so where does that leave us as far as basketball and seeding and where Scott Drew and the Baylor men are going to end up? Well, let's kind of just pack up the Big 12 tournament and that demolition before we get into the seed and what preceded the seeding and where Baylor ended up. Any thoughts that carry over or that, I guess, still linger after watching Iowa State take the Bears to the woodshed? And, you know, part of that self-inflicted, certainly, Baylor not being able to land much in the way of shots. It was a hard night to watch the shooting of Baylor, but Iowa State, a really good team, and I don't think too much shame in losing to them. It's just you better hope that when you get into postseason play, your shots are falling a little bit better than they were the other night.
Right, and I mean, you do have to mention they beat Cincinnati in the first game, so I mean, at least there is some positives there. They played pretty well in that game, especially late. Really were able to pull away and take control of that game, but you're exactly right. I mean, this team, I'm not going to say everything is dictated on their ability to make shots, but if they're going to make a deep run, their run is going to be determined on three-pointers and just how efficient their offense is, because I think we're far enough into the season right now where you're not going to see some magical change by this team defensively. Like, they're not a good defensive team. We know this. We've seen it. Their inability to play man defense, their reliance on this zone defense that, if you prepare for it, can be picked apart at times. It's difficult. Now, you get into postseason play, and you're going to face teams that don't know everything about you, aren't necessarily equipped to take full advantage of the things that you show them. So maybe that does help. But in general, the offense is what's going to have to carry this team, basically like it did all season. But you saw in that game against Iowa State, you face a really physical team who plays really good defense. And if you're unable to make shots, they can really just, things can snowball on you. And it did in that game for the whole 40 minutes. It did in the Houston game for the first 20 minutes at home. And we've seen it at other times as well. But yeah, I think it just reaffirms everything that I've basically thought about this team all year.
So where does that leave them after beating Cincinnati and then going and getting beat by eventual tournament champion Iowa State? Where does that leave Scott Drew and the Bears? Well, it left him as the number 9 overall seed when looking at the complete bracket for 2024. UConn, the number 1 team in the country. Houston, 2. Purdue, 3. And North Carolina, 4. Tennessee, Arizona, Marquette, and Iowa State. were your two seeds. And then there was Baylor, number 9 overall, and a 3 seed out in the West region is where the Bears find themselves, taking on 14th-seeded Colgate in the first round of NCAA tournament action. That is the West region that has North Carolina as the top seed, Arizona, future Big 12 conference mate, starting next year as the number 2 overall seed, and then there's Baylor at 3 out in the Western region. So Colgate up first, and they would then take on the winner of Clemson and New Mexico, which is a 6 versus 11 matchup in the second round, and then so on and so forth, where you'd be looking at facing off with most likely Arizona, barring any upsets there in the round of 16. So that's kind of your path for right now. Colgate, the sure thing, and then have to win that one, and then we'll see where it takes you, either against Clemson or New Mexico and so forth. But how are you feeling about the draw and where they sit, and just what were your initial impressions when you saw all the information start to roll out this past Sunday?
I mean, I'm not sure that Baylor could have gotten a better draw. I mean, I know people are going to argue this New Mexico team that they might play in the second round as being underseeded, but, you know, there's still, what, an 8, 9, 10, 11? That's kind of the team that they are. Baylor gets to play Colgate. Colgate has not had very much success in the NCAA tournament, and this year's team I don't think matches up very well against Baylor. So, again, I feel like that should be a pretty comfortable win for the Bears going into the second round. And then you might be facing New Mexico or Clemson. New Mexico is actually the favorite in that game right now, I think by a couple points, which is interesting, which makes me pick Clemson in that game because everyone's picking New Mexico going into it. I think New Mexico is the tougher matchup. I think both teams, though, very winnable for Baylor. And then you're looking at potential Sweet 16 berth. And I mean, again, I don't feel like this could have set up much better for Baylor. They're going to have to play really well. We understand that. But I think in general, that beginning part really is manageable. And then you look at the rest of the bracket. North Carolina, they're the worst number one seed. Arizona, they've had their struggles in the NCAA tournament. They played in a very weak conference this year as well. Who knows what you're going to get from them? So I think in general, Baylor has an opportunity to take advantage of this, but they absolutely need to because they have not had a ton of success recently in the tournament, aside from the national championship, of course, in 2021.
Yeah, they had that amazing run, and then since then it's been relatively quick exits, quite frankly. And so it's that time now. I mean, it's time to get going. So it'll be at 11:40 a.m. start time coming up on Friday on True TV. So it's that time of year to go and dust off your guidebook as far as your TV goes. I don't know how much True TV people are watching. I don't know. Is Impractical Joker still on there? I never watched that, but I just remember the commercials every time I cross that channel. So yeah, True TV is where you're going to find this one coming up on Friday in the middle of the day. And Baylor, as it stands right now, a 13.5-point favorite for this contest out in Memphis, Tennessee at the FedEx Forum. So there's all the information on who, what, where, when, and then we'll be talking about why they advanced to go play a second round or why they didn't. Hopefully we're talking about why they advanced to the Sweet 16 the next time we join you, though, because they will have played a couple of games, knock on wood, but that certainly should be the expectation to what you were just saying a few minutes or a couple seconds ago.
Right, and Garrett and I were having this discussion before we got on the podcast, so I wanted to bring this up to you, Craig, because I do think this is an important tournament for Baylor and for Scott Drew. We mentioned the last 2 years they've been bounced in the second round. 2022 was to the 8 seed North Carolina, who ended up being the national runner-up, but still an 8 seed. And then last year to Creighton, a 6 seed. Won the national championship in 2021. 2020, the COVID year, they probably would have been a 1 or a 2 seed. But before that, I mean, it just has been kind of a consistent trend of just having problems, I would say, in the tournament. So since 2015, they lost in the first round to Georgia State. 2016, lost to a 12 seed in Yale. 2017, lost by 20 to a 7 seed South Carolina in the Sweet 16. 2018, missed the tournament. And then 2018, lost in the second round to Gonzaga. So there hasn't been a ton of success in there outside the national championship. And it just makes you think, like, hey, you know, this is a time for Baylor to make a run here. 5 of the last 7 tournaments, they've been bounced by a 6 seed or worse. That's not great. you know, getting upset in multiple tournaments. That's kind of been the trend here. And I mean, that's just something that that I think is something worth paying attention to. And it's not necessarily, oh, Scott Drew in the hot seat. Absolutely not. We know he's a great coach. He's had so much success at Baylor, won a national championship. But I think in general, you know, if Baylor wants to be this program that truly is a new blood or a borderline blue blood program, you got to stack more Sweet 16s than they've been able to do in the last 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect Sweet 16s like every year, even every other year necessarily, but it has been a couple years now since they really advanced what feels like far enough to really quench the thirst. And so, yeah, Sweet 16 has been unattainable since the championship run. And so here, 3 years later, you would hope to finally be knocking back on that door. Easier said than done, obviously, but I don't know. Last week, I already started to hear the jockeying. Well, you know, expectations, it all depends if they get this bad matchup. And I'll say what I said last week of at some point, you know, North Carolina or Duke or any of these other teams that you would want to consider blue blood basketball programs, it stopped being about the matchup year to year. It's like, you just go win those games. Like, go win those games. I just feel like people are already starting to talk themselves into, maybe it's a Baylor thing, I don't know, of just automatically assuming when the loss is going to come and the upset's going to come. And it's like, I don't care what the matchup is. I don't care if your biggest weakness is three-point defense and you're playing the best three-point shooting team in the country. If you are a top-notch program, you're going to find ways to win those games more often than not. And I don't know if they're there to that point right now or just yet. I think they've proven they can go the entire distance, obviously, but you have to start stacking, like you said. And so, yeah, this would be a good year to do that with the investments in this team you've made, with the type of season that you've had. Yeah, anything less than, I think, going to the Sweet 16 would have to be considered a disappointment. Now, we'll see how that happens, if that happens. But, yeah, they need to make a little bit of noise and hang around past the first weekend because it's been a little while.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, Clemson, that's not a basketball powerhouse. They're fine this year. They're pretty mediocre in the ACC. I mean, I don't think they're that good. And then New Mexico, I keep hearing people say, New Mexico, it's a bad matchup for Baylor. They're really, really good. I understand they're good, but let's pump the brakes a little bit on they're really, really good. Like, they're a good team. They're a fun story because Eddie House's son is on the team. Jamal Mashburn's son is on the team. All of that's really cool. They are a good team, but, like, let's not kid ourselves here. They're a good team. They're probably a top 30-ish type team, but they should not be beating Baylor on a neutral site. I don't think that should be happening. I don't think Clemson should either. And I fully expect Baylor to make it to the Sweet 16. I fully expect them to take care of business these first two games.
Well, the Big 12 with eight teams selected to the championships, with the Bears, obviously, the Big 12 tournament champions in Iowa State. You had Kansas, BYU, Texas, Texas Tech, and TCU also making it as well. So the Big 12 represent, I think I missed out saying Houston, too. So Houston and Iowa State, the two championship contenders. And then there's Baylor, who you would think is probably the next best bet as far as Big 12 title contenders go. I've seen some brackets have the Bears going deep, have them going to the Final Four. Seen some have them Sweet 16. Haven't seen too many that have them going out too early, though. So, yeah, I think that's the expectation kind of across the board, is for this to be a team we're talking about in weekend number two. But to do that, you've got to take care of your business up first. And so it's the Tournament of Madness for a reason. So no looking past Colgate if you're Scott Drew and company, the number 14 seed.
Yeah, and Colgate's a decent team. I mean, kind of looking at just their metrics, they're pretty good on offense, pretty mediocre on, I mean, they're pretty mediocre kind of at everything. I mean, they're a 14 seed, so you kind of understand what you're getting going into it. But offensively, they're 211th according to KenPom. Defensively, they're 104th. So a little bit better on the defensive side, obviously, than on the offensive side. But this is a team that Colgate gets to the tournament a lot. I mean, they're there very often. Sometimes they're really a pick that a lot of people like to make. But in general, they really have not had a ton of success in the tournament. So going into this matchup, you kind of look at, you know, what could they do that poses a problem for Baylor? Well, they play a lot of guys. They play a ton of guys on this team. I think they play like 10 deep as far as guys who actually play almost every single game. They have a really good player in Braden Smith who averages about 13 points, 5.5 rebounds, 6 assists. So he's a really quality player. Not a great shooter, but does a lot of things to set the table for this team offensively and on the defensive side as well. They have a couple big guys in Keegan Records and Jeff Woodward. Records is going to be their starter. He's going to be the matchup for Yves Misi to start the game. But outside of that, they got a bunch of guys who can shoot the ball pretty well. They play really hard as a team, but they really don't have any guys that you're just like, wow, that guy really scares me as far as an offensive or defensive guy outside of Braden Smith.
So no RJ Hunter looming out there.
No, Mekhi Mason.
Mekhi Mason, whoever else you want to insert into the Bear Killers over the years, over somewhat recent years, over the last decade, I guess, or so, when it comes to tournament play. And, yeah, those are a couple names that are haunting, even though Mason ended up a Bear before it was all said and done. But, yeah, nobody like that, it would appear, on the Colgate side of things. But that is what's staring at Scott Drew and the men now. Certainly would love to see a Jacoby Walter, for example, have a much better showing in his first NCAA tournament game than we saw in the final game against Iowa State. Not that anybody had a great game to really write home about, but it was a situation where you're going to have to get more than 3 points out of one of your stars. And the other night, that was one of the glaring numbers in the box scores. Jalen Bridges did his amount and did what he could, but did not have a lot of help. Yves Misi had some moments, second leading scorer, but beyond that, Caleb Lohner's been having his moments, I would say. I mean, he's not ever going to be like the star of the show per se, but he's playing good basketball at a right time, so hopefully he can keep that up. But yeah, I mean, Bridges is your tried and true. A guy like Lohner coming on, and you're going to need these star freshmen to be stars. It's March. It's time. Yeah. So it's all hands on deck here.
And you need Langston Love to hopefully come back. Because that's clearly been something they've been missing. Having a guy you can bring in off the bench who is a flat-out star, I mean, that's such a luxury to have. Most teams in college basketball don't have that. So hopefully he's able to get back and get healthy. I will say, I feel like this is a pretty fun nugget. But a lot of times people like to pick the 3 versus 14 matchup. I know the 12 versus 5 and the 11 versus 6 have become extremely popular. But just keep this in mind when you're filling out your bracket and if you're thinking you might pick Colgate over Baylor. Since 2017, 3 seeds are 23-1 in this matchup. So this is not the matchup to target when you're talking about 14 seeds versus 3 seeds. So keep that in mind as you're filling out your bracket and as far as, you know, Baylor potentially struggling with this matchup. Colgate's also made the tournament 5 of the last 6 years. They've lost all 5 times, been blown out, I think only 3 of those, and hung in a couple games. But in general, again, they haven't had a lot of recent tournament success when it comes to actually winning and pulling off the upset.
And when it comes to Langston Love, from John Rothstein earlier today, Scott Drew saying that Love will be evaluated for the ankle injury following practices this week, and then his status will be determined for Friday against Colgate. That's not anything that's breaking news. That's kind of what you would expect when he's been in and out of the lineup now for the past few weeks with injuries, but he is going to be evaluated, I guess, here in the next, it'd have to be the next couple of days. I mean, they're playing 3 days, so see how he is over, I guess, the next 24, 48, whatever hours, and then hopefully by the time Friday rolls around, he is ready to go. But as Scott Drew said, when asked if Love will play, that's the plan. So we'll see how healthy he is, and obviously that's going to be a big part of the storylines for the Baylor men starting this weekend. So there you go, Colgate first round action, and then we will go from there. But safe travels to everybody going to Memphis. You going to Memphis to go check out?
I won't be there. I know Jack is. Jack will be there covering it for us. It'll be fun. I mean, it's another opportunity to make it to a Sweet 16 for this team, and it should be some good matchups and some fun for Jack up there in Memphis.
Yeah, so Baylor, number 9 overall seed, and it is Colgate up first, and then we will see beyond that. But a good draw, certainly a better draw than Iowa State got. I know a lot of the commotion over just how good they looked in the Big 12 tournament, and they turn around and get what seems like a very raw end of the deal. And then Baylor, everybody kind of judging their draws, and as you said earlier, one that they've got to feel like is pretty favorable for them. So, yeah, we'll see. But after that, Clemson and New Mexico is what you're looking at as far as the extent of this weekend, and then we'll revisit this coming up on next Tuesday's show. Who did you have as far as you – I haven't gone through my bracket yet. I'm not one of those that, like, gets in and just starts going right away. So have you already filled out yours, though?
And, I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where do you have Baylor, and I guess just kind of what's the general theme of your bracket, I guess you could say?
I've been going back and forth on that Baylor Sweet 16 matchup with Arizona. That's who I project them playing in the Sweet 16. Again, I think they're going to play Clemson in the second round this weekend. I think they're going to get by them, and then I think they're going to play Arizona. And I've been flipping this back and forth. Currently, I have Arizona beating Baylor in the Sweet 16, but I will say I don't trust Arizona at all. I'm not sure that I trust Baylor at all either, so I do feel like that's a bit of a toss-up game. But in general, I have North Carolina getting out of that region, regardless of who I have winning that matchup. Outside of that, my Final Four, I have UConn, which I'm still debating on that if I think they're going to get by Auburn. It's just so hard to repeat and get back there, but I have them in there right now. I have Kentucky in there. That's a scary one, trusting John Calipari in the NCAA tournament recently and the fact they don't play defense. Again, pretty scary, and then even scarier, but got to go with my heart here. I got Purdue also in the Final Four. I also have Purdue winning the national championship, which I know is very controversial, and everyone's going to call me crazy because there's no way Purdue is actually going to come through in an NCAA tournament, but I think they have the best player in the country. I think their guards have gotten a lot better from what happened to them a year ago. I got them winning the national championship right now.
All right, fair enough. I don't have my picks taken care of just yet, so I won't throw mine out there, but that sounds solid enough reasoning as to why, and you know what? Anybody's guess is mm-hmm. you know, worth the same as anybody else's at this point. It's March Madness, so we'll see who's got the best bracket when all is said and done. But there's the men's side of things, and so we know what's going on as far as the path for this opening weekend for Scott Drew and company. The Bears finished 23-10 in the regular and tournament season, and now it's win or go home, baby. And so here we are at the end of basketball season, and the same goes for the Baylor women. Nikki Collin and company getting their seeds as well for the women's side of the NCAA tournament, and they are a number 5 seed, and they will be taking part in action with a number 1 seed out in Portland and USC. You're looking at, as well, Ohio State as the number 2 seed in that region, and then you've got, let's see here, who is the number 3? UConn, Virginia Tech, and then you get to Baylor. So those are the top 5 seeds, the Bears at number 5, and still awaiting who they're going to play, which they won't find out for another 3 days as Virginia Tech and Marshall will square off in a 4-13 matchup. And the winner of that game is Baylor will face the winner of the play-in game. And who is that?
Vanderbilt and Columbia.
Vanderbilt, yeah. Gosh, I was looking at that wrong. I was already advancing them to the second round, which I don't think people would be too upset with. But yes, Vanderbilt and Columbia, the 12 play-in game, which is coming up at 8 o'clock from Blacksburg, Virginia, 12-seeded Vandy, 12-seeded Columbia. The winner gets that 12 seed to move on into actual tournament play against 5-seeded Baylor. So, yeah, this will be one you got to sit back and wait on the opponent. But Nikki Collin and company with a great opportunity to go and make some noise. There's not huge expectations for them. They're kind of flying under the radar, if anything. But I mentioned that's a – it's going to be tough sledding for a team that's just been kind of up and down, although they ended the season pretty hot. Tournament didn't go necessarily the way that you wanted, but they've been a solid team. It's just not one that I'm expecting like some big ramp up into, you know, some massive run. So I don't know. How are you feeling about the Baylor women at this point?
I'm not feeling great. I'm not feeling great at all. I mean, I don't think I'm going to pick them to lose the first game. I think they're going to get out of there, but it's going to be tough. I mean, this team, this is the thing with this Baylor women's team. They've beaten some really, really good teams, and then they've lost to some really, really bad teams. So it's just kind of been this level of inconsistency that has been maddening, frankly. And so they could lose the first round game. I'm going to have them winning the first round game, regardless of who they play, Vanderbilt or Columbia. But I don't think they're getting past Virginia Tech. I think they're going to lose in the the round of 32. It's just hard. You're playing on the road. You're having to play a really good Virginia Tech team that's very talented, that can shoot the ball really well. I don't think it's necessarily the worst draw when you look at it like that. But then you look at this bracket as a whole, and you see UConn as your three seed. I mean, that's pretty crazy, and I think that makes this region pretty tough. But I think Baylor's got to focus on what's right in front of them, and that's getting out of this initial matchup with Virginia Tech and the first one. So, yeah, I just think the inconsistency is troubling for me, and it causes me to not be able to pick them to go far.
Yeah, I think getting out of the first round is something that you'd expect bare minimum as the higher seed. And typically it's chalk in the women's bracket. For the most part, I mean, maybe that's the different story this year, but typically it's a little less upset filled than the men's side of the tournament. And so you would think that that'll put you in the round of 32. And then beyond that, though, I don't know. It's anybody's guess as to how far they go, but it'll either be Vanderbilt or Columbia coming up in Blacksburg, Virginia on Friday at 5 p.m. So that is what the women are awaiting. And, yeah, safe travels to everybody. You know, men heading to Memphis, women heading to Blacksburg, Virginia, home of Virginia Tech. But, yeah, safe travels to everybody heading out there later on this week, and hopefully get to hang around for a little while, no matter who wins that play-in game. But Vanderbilt or Columbia, and then let's see. Who did I say after that? It'll be either Virginia Tech or Marshall, which you would think going chalk, that would be Virginia Tech. And then beyond that, you're looking at the likes of Syracuse, UConn, eventually Duke, Ohio State. So
USC.
USC, those are some of the higher seeds in that part of the Portland region three, or the regional three in Portland. So there you go. There's a little bit of the path for Nikki Collin and the Baylor women. And I don't know. Texas dominated by the end of things. I mean, they were on such a hot streak there in the Big 12. They were clearly the hottest team coming out. But beyond that, I don't know how much you're really thinking of the conference making noise like it stands to on the men's side of things. Texas, especially with the Rory Harmon injury, pretty amazing how good that they've turned into. But for Baylor, I don't feel like there's really a big departure one direction or the other from kind of what we've seen. It just feels like it's sort of been an even line kind of season long for this squad.
It really has been. I mean, the beginning of the season started so strong, and then they hit Big 12 play. They beat Texas early in Big 12 play, and then things kind of went off the rails. But we mentioned 2 weeks ago, I guess, before the Big 12 tournament, that it was so important for Baylor to get the 4 seed. And here's even more confirmation why. Number 4 seeds are 109-7 against number 13 seeds, and that's because you're playing a home game. You flip that around for 5 versus 12 seeds, and it's 89-27. So there's a lot more room for Baylor to get upset in the first round, and then obviously you move over another round, and then you're having to play that same 4 seed that's there pretty much every year, and that matchup does not go very favorably either most times for the 5 seed. And so you kind of look at that and you go, man, it just feels like there were so many missed opportunities this year. And just for some reason, you know, they just couldn't capitalize on it.
Yeah, so here we go. Big Friday of hoops coming up this weekend, and starting at 11:40 a.m. with the men versus Colgate on True TV, 5 p.m., the women versus either Vandy or Columbia on ESPNU. So a full day of action. And then that women's game starts early enough to where, for better or worse, you might be celebrating 2 victories by the beginning of the night and having a good old Friday night getting the to get ready for a round 2 for both teams, and hopefully that is the case. But again, 11:40 a.m. when March Madness will officially start around these parts with the men's team. So anything else basketball-related that you'd like to touch on here?
No, I think that's pretty much it. It's an exciting time. It's my favorite sporting event, really, of the entire year, every year. So I'm just excited for it. It's going to be really, really cool, really fun to see, and looking for a bunch of upsets. I got Grand Canyon in my Sweet 16, so a little Bryce Drew action there, making a little bit of noise in there, beating Alabama in the second round.
So as a big fan, are you hoping for an expanded tournament like they're trying to possibly move towards, according to folks like Greg Sankey, or at least being teased about as far as adding more seeds to the tournament. How do you feel about that?
No, I think it's perfect. I like it the way that it is. Even the play-in games are a little taxing. I could do without those. But, hey, you know, it is what it is. I will say I like the bracket the way that it is. I will also say, though, for the Big 12, an expanded tournament means you pretty much get in all but two teams this year. And so money-wise, that could be really good for the conference. It makes sense why you would try to kind of dominate in that regard, just because of how we're seeing football trend over these next few years as far as how the revenue is going to be dispersed.
Yeah, it's a very interesting time. Earlier today, Clemson filing a lawsuit against the ACC. They become the second school in the ACC to file a lawsuit against the conference challenging its contracts and the grant of rights. Florida State obviously did that a little while ago, and that's been a story we've monitored from start to finish, and even before the ACC was really even a thought in this whole big scheme. I mean, we were tracking, obviously, the loss of Oklahoma and Texas, which then turned into the additions of Houston and BYU and UCF and Cincinnati, which then turned into scrambling and the Pac-12 dying, and then turned into going the Big 12 grabbing Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. And it seems like maybe you were going to get a little bit of a chance to take a breath, and now you got the ACC facing two lawsuits from two of its top programs. And if that starts to crater, there's the Big 12 and Brett Yormark, and just very interesting times. And the tournament is part of the topics of just this ever-evolving sort of college landscape that we're in right now. That's something that's now been debated about. So the Big 12 seems well-positioned for that. The big picture, I don't know. Certainly they stand to possibly gain from more chaos, I guess, in another conference, but yeah, this is all going to be very interesting to watch. And having said that, one of the schools in the ACC, if things were to kind of crack and fall apart, that would probably be in the Big 12 pretty quickly would be Louisville. Mm-hmm. And I know you've seen all of the talk all over the website and all over Twitter, and I'm not trying to pour gasoline on a fire that's, you know, not that big of a deal, but I think it's eye of the beholder. Certainly you ask some people that think Scott Drew is a name to talk about. You ask certain people, Scott Drew is going to be at Baylor for the rest of his career. I just wanted to ask you before we move on here, what do you make of all the Scott Drew talk, and just how do you feel about rumors and Louisville and another coaching carousel rumor cycle?
I think that a lot of programs that are struggling that used to be big time programs are and should mention Scott Drew every time they're looking for a hire. I mean, IU did this, Louisville's doing it. Like, of course you want Scott Drew. I mean, that makes total sense. I think any program would be foolish to not want him, you know, at that kind of level. As far as a program that's trying to rebuild their brand, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Unfortunately, I think Louisville is kind of living in the past a little bit here, and I know they have the NIL and they have a good arena, and I know they have resources. I understand all that, but it's also a program that's in total rebuild after what just happened with Kenny Payne. I mean, they were terrible. Not just like, oh, you know, they had a couple bad years. They were awful, absolutely awful, and now they're just expecting, oh, yeah, now we're going to pull a coach who just got this new arena, who has all this momentum at Baylor, who's recruiting way better than Louisville right now. It's not even close. And then you're just expecting him to leave. I don't really see that. I think they're probably going to end up with, you know, a mid-major guy like a Dusty May or something along those lines. I don't think they're going to end up with Scott Drew. And then they're going to tell you that they're probably going to make up some story to spin it and say that Scott Drew wasn't actually their top candidate, which will be really funny as well. But I think in general, I don't think he's going to end up at Louisville. I think it's kind of been a lot of noise, a lot of smoke for kind of nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just typical social media and fodder, and anytime there's a coaching opening, I mean, let's not pretend like Baylor hasn't had their fair share of crazy names thrown out when they've had coaching cycles before, and certainly names where I think Clemson fans are like, Dabo guys, really? You think you're going to get Dabo? You know, like that kind of a thing. And so every school's been through that at some point or another. But I do believe that, yeah, Scott Drew's where he's built up a program for the last 20 years and has things rolling pretty good right now. So, I mean, barring I haven't paid much attention to it, and I definitely haven't gotten involved in it. I'm just curious on people's different opinions on it. But, I mean, outside of him just wanting to do something just for the sake of doing something different. Like, I'm just, you know, I've been here a long time. I just want to do something. Outside of that, I don't think it'll be the money or the NIL or any. It's just, I think the only thing would just be like, you know what? I just want to go and live somewhere else, you know, for the first time in 2 decades. And beyond that, I see no reason why that would be appealing to you with what you've already got set up.
Yeah, I just don't think it's with this job. Yeah. I mean, if he were to leave, I just think it would probably be a blue blood. And I don't view Louisville as a blue blood as much as Louisville fans will tell you they are. There's only one blue blood in the state of Kentucky right now, and that's Kentucky. And so I don't view it that way. I think Baylor, again, trending in a better direction than Louisville. I don't see him leaving for that job, especially since he didn't leave for the IU job. Mm-hmm. And I think those jobs are pretty comparable, but I would also say IU, historically, better program. I mean, historically. Not right now. I mean, neither one's very good right now.
No, not right now. So there you go. I just wanted to touch on that because that's been all the rage. We've got like a 20,000-page, thread on the website talking about this, and seen countless more Louisville fans on Twitter than I've seen in years.
More Louisville fans on our website.
On our website. But I think we're all on the same page of, yeah, we'll eat crow, but I think all of us would be absolutely gobsmacked shocked if Scott Drew were to be anywhere else but Baylor. So just wanted to bring that forward and around as we close out on basketball. Meanwhile, touching briefly on some of the other spring sports, Baylor baseball, a very shocking weekend. Speaking of shocking, taking the series against Texas Tech, and did not see that coming, but man, what a welcome surprise. After losing the opener 2-0 on Friday, the Bears turn around and get a 5-1 and 7-2 pair of wins on Saturday and Sunday to beat number 23 Texas Tech and take the series in Waco. And Mason Green, Big 12 newcomer of the week, the freshman left-hander that announced by the conference yesterday, picked up his first win of his college career with 6 shutout innings against Texas Tech in their series win 7-2 on Sunday. So congratulations to Mason Green. And wow, that was out of nowhere, felt like. And so congrats to Mitch Thompson and company. Long season ahead, but that'll certainly make you feel better about things. 7-12 now overall, and went from 0-3 in the conference to 2-4 in the conference, and now have a couple of wins in a row. So that's a big deal for a team that definitely has started off with its fair share of struggles. And later on this evening, they'll be down in Huntsville to take on Sam Houston before a weekend series in Austin against Texas, who's okay. I mean, they're good. They're better than Baylor on paper, but they're not like the rock stars of the conference like they have been so many times in years past. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see kind of what the follow-up is later tonight and then this weekend. But man, they needed that, and I was not expecting that. So that was pretty cool to see this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is 11-8. So, yeah, they're just okay. They're coming off of losing a series to Washington. Like you mentioned, Baylor plays Sam Houston, who is pretty good. They're 13-7. But, yeah, you mentioned the week that they just had. Stephen F. Austin, they beat them 17-4. Lost the first one to Tech, and then 5-1, 7-2. I mean, that's just a great run there. And really, the pitching was the story. I mean, to only give up 3 runs in an entire series against Texas Tech is really impressive. Tech usually can really hit the baseball well, but they did not do that against Baylor. So I think you're seeing some encouraging signs. It's now about how do you build off of that, right? Because they still did get swept by Houston, who's pretty good. I think we can look back and say that. But in general, you know, are you the team that got swept by Houston, or are you actually this team that won this series against Texas Tech? I think we're going to find that out in this Texas series, because Texas is gettable here, even in Austin. It's winnable games. So can you go in there and maybe steal that series? That would be really, really intriguing, but really happy for the program, happy for Mitch Thompson, happy for the players. They really needed something positive, it felt like. It just kind of had been a snowball of negativity the last year and a half.
They were digging a pretty big hole early on. You wondered how much they were going to dig and how deep it was going to go. And so then a little bit of a reprieve to have the big series win this weekend, and maybe a little momentum and certainly some positive feelings flowing through the locker room. So we'll see how they capitalize on that, if at all. But, yeah, that was cool to see. And then meanwhile, sticking on the diamond, the softball team, which had gotten off to a really good start, got beat up on this past weekend, swept by Kansas out in Lawrence. So after getting a pair of wins over Lamar last Tuesday, turn right around and lose 3-2, 2-0, and then 1-0. And they get swept by the Jayhawks out at Rock Chalk Park. They'll be back in action tonight on a Tuesday as we record this against Houston Christian, and then we'll face off with Oklahoma this weekend in Oklahoma City. So good luck with all that. As that program is just an absolute juggernaut, as much of a juggernaut as there is in college sports right now. So, yeah, Oklahoma coming up this weekend on the road. So not the greatest amount of momentum rolling into what should be a very difficult week competition-wise. But, yeah, 16-8 overall, 1-5 in conference play. And three losses in a row after that sweep to Kansas. So,
and here comes 27-1 Oklahoma.
Yeah. I mean,
they might be sitting there at 1-8.
Very well could be.
Big 12 play, and that is pretty shocking from where they were a week ago. You're kind of thinking, okay, they're going to turn around against Kansas here. And they did not show up. Kansas is 19-7-1. They're fine. They should not have been good enough to sweep Baylor. That's really, really a tough one for the Bears. They're going to have to regroup quickly. But the good news is you beat Oklahoma at least once, and that's pretty good on the tournament resume.
Yeah, and we know they beat them last year, and then Oklahoma went on their crazy win streak and won a national title and then got beat earlier this year, and that snapped that streak since the last time they lost to Baylor. But regardless, digging a little bit of a hole here early in Big 12 play, so we'll see. Houston Christian and then the Oklahoma Sooners for Baylor softball. So there's a little bit of a recap and kind of touching on what's going on right now, this spring schedule. But this is also a very big day because it is the return of football around these parts. Dave Aranda and the Bears back out on the practice fields later on this afternoon for the start of spring football and year 5 of the Dave Aranda era, believe it or not, is about to commence. And, man, so many changes this past offseason, changes that were then changed again because of coaches getting jobs after taking the job here, which, you know, was just something that's a part of the carousel nowadays. But it seems as though things are finally settled in, and Inoki Brechterfield, the last assistant coach hire that was finally made official. We touched on that last week. So here we go. The staff is finally finalized. The roster pretty much returns in mass. And we know it's a very big year for Dave Aranda in terms of expectations and just necessity. He needs to go and win some games. His program needs to win some games. It's been a rough couple of years now, records-wise. So how are you feeling? Start of spring football, and what's standing out to you, or what's top of mind as they start to roll the footballs back out there on the practice fields?
This spring is huge. I mean, it's like we've talked about. Dave Aranda fighting for his job here, made all kinds of changes. He's going to be coaching the defense, so very intrigued by that. I think right off the top is, you know, he's the defensive coordinator, essentially. I mean, I know he doesn't necessarily have that title. Matthew Palich still does, but he's going to be calling the defense and really making defense a priority this spring. So I'm very intrigued by that, intrigued by the new offensive staff with Jake Spavital coming in, and you know, having a new group of coaches kind of there, and what he's going to bring as far as energy, momentum, scheme, all of those things. Really, really excited about that, and excited to see how quickly he can make those changes. As you know, you're going from a wide zone scheme to now this spread air raid type offense. There's a lot of adjustments to be made there for sure. So very curious by that. Curious by the new quarterback that Baylor has in Daquan Finn. You know, what's he going to look like? What's his explosiveness as a runner going to do for this team? Yeah, those are some of the bigger areas. I will say, you know, I posted this on the board, so might as well talk about it here since we're kind of talking about storylines in the spring. Jarrell Boykins has medically retired from football. I reported that earlier on the website, and, you know, losing a nose tackle, not ideal, not ideal at all. We saw the problems they had when they didn't have him last year. They didn't have him or Trey Emery last year, basically, for the whole season. So you're rolling out Cooper Lands, a true freshman, and Brendan Bett. They did bring in a JUCO nose tackle in Tonga Lolahia. So we're going to see kind of what they can build there. But losing Boykins is a big loss. And that's an area that I think they're going to have to address post-spring, probably.
Yeah, he has never factored in at all, really.
Well, he got hurt in the spring game bad. And
no, I know. I'm
missed.
Saying he yeah. never factored in no. as a result of that. I mean, he was a name we talked a lot about. And, I mean,
Nothing. Unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, nothing came of it. That's just unfortunately part of the breaks in some people's cases. But, yeah, all that discussion and just could never get healthy. So now medically retiring. That's unfortunate just for him on a personal level, I'm sure. So I hope he's dealing with that okay because that's always a tough decision to have to make. But, yeah, just a total lack of getting – you know, anything out of that addition. And I'm trying to phrase it because I'm not trying to be, like, personally mean here, It's just, it was just a miss and nothing you can really do about it when a guy's got health issues like that. But, yeah, that's one that you wish you got a little bit more impact from that spot. So,
and the staff loved him. When he came in, they thought he was going to come in and replace Apuika and really be a huge factor. And then you go to the spring game and he gets hurt. You know, very early in that game, and you're just kind of like, uh-oh. And now, and then you fast forward to the season, and they had no one that they could start at nose tackle that was his size. I mean, he's like 330 pounds. They didn't have anyone like that. Cooper Land's under 300 pounds. Brendan Bett, like, right at 300 pounds, and a freshman having to handle a lot of the workload. I'm very nervous about nose tackle now. That position's very injury plagued. It just has not been able to be healthy. So I'm curious how they do that. And it really impacts their whole defensive line because Cooper Lands could be playing field or boundary end, maybe more of his natural position. You could even maybe move Brendan Bett to boundary end, maybe his more natural position as well. But they don't really have that luxury now.
So, on offense, you've got Daquan Finn, who's now here at quarterback. Obviously, Sawyer Robertson returns as well. RJ Martinez, that room's pretty much intact outside of trading Daquan Finn for Blake Shapen, is basically what you did. And, you know, it seems like forever ago we were talking about Blake Shapen. Like, that's now distant memory. And so that'll be fresh and new in some way, seeing Daquan Finn out there. At running back, you return en masse. Everybody's back. Wide receiver, pretty much everybody's back. I mean, you brought in some guys through the transfer portal. Offensive line-wise, you've got changeover on the coaching staff, obviously. You had to go and go do a second round of hires there because the Chris Kapilovich tenure was brief, to say the least, before he went and took the Alabama job. Didn't even see him coach a practice. So you've got the changeover there. Obviously, Jake Spavital, just in general with the offense, it's a brand new feel. So new quarterback, new offensive coordinator, new offensive line coach. What am I missing here? New tight ends coach, obviously, because Jeff Grimes is gone, huh?
New linebackers coach.
Well, I'm saying offensively.
Oh, yeah.
But moving on from Jeff Grimes and the RVO and the wide zone and everything that he did, he now will go and do all of that up at Kansas with Lance Leipold and company, and good luck to him. And I think that's more his speed is that's more of what they do up there, so that should be a pretty nice transition or easy transition for Jeff Grimes. But just in general, offensively, what are you most excited about and most looking forward to this spring?
Yeah, I'm just excited to see these transfers. I mean, you got Michael Trigg coming in from Ole Miss. He's going to be playing tight end where Jared Anderson is now the coach. And Trigg is just a special athlete. He was a four-star prospect, a guy who I think can be a legit difference maker. And I know you lose Drake Dabney, who was kind of a difference maker last year, but I think Trigg athletically is just so different from Dabney. I think that if you reach his ceiling, if you're able to develop him properly, he could be really, really good this year. Really, really dominant. Has that kind of ceiling in his athletic profile. You add guys like Jamal Bell from Nevada and Ashton Hawkins. Pretty similar, yet pretty different. You know, Bell more of a gadget guy, a guy who hasn't caught a ton of passes, but has been somewhat productive, a really good return man as well. And then you got Ashton Hawkins, who just ultra productive the last 2 years at Texas State, has great familiarity with the air raid offense with Jake Spavital, as he was actually at Texas State with Jake Spavital as well. Back in 2021. So, yeah, I'm just intrigued by those guys to see what they can kind of bring on the field as well. And then, of course, the transfers up front, you know, Kurt Daneker, Omar Egbedian, you know, what are they going to bring at those guard positions? And then all those guys returning from last year's team, how do they develop? They were so young a year ago. Now can they take that next step forward and improve under Mason Miller? We're going to see. But in general, I think we basically know this offense is going to come down to what kind of play do they get from Daquan Finn, I think. I know the offense line is going to be very important, but I think Daquan Finn, how good is he? Is he a top three quarterback in the Big 12 good? Or is he just middle of the road? That's what we're going to kind of, I think, find out. The offensive line would go a long way into helping that. But, you know, what level is he is going to be really important. Because if he's the best quarterback in the Big 12, then Baylor's ceiling instantly improves.
Yeah, which will be easier said than done when you've got Avery Johnson and you've got Cam Rising and you've got Noah Fafita. And so there's already a line formed ahead of Daquan Finn, Jalen Daniels. We can go on, but there's already some guys in front of him in line. But yeah, let's see if he can take some spots away and move his way up. But yeah, a lot of this is going to come down to just Jake Spavital's scheme and what the new assistants can provide in terms of, you know, particularly looking at the offensive line. It was very rough last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now out goes Eric Mateos. And a couple hires later, they've finally, you know, found what they hope is to be the answer there. But some new faces, new quarterback. And you mentioned, you know, some of the outgoing, like Elijah Ellis. I was looking at where the guys ended up. He ended up at Marshall. He left this offseason. Drake Dabney went to TCU, obviously. Blake Shapen to Mississippi State. George Maye landed at Utah State back home. For him, and then Timothy Dawn back home in Arkansas is where he ended up. So that was the departures from the offense, but Dabney is obviously the major one. Shapen, too. I don't want to take away. I mean, guys started a ton of games, but I think in the case of Shapen, all parties were ready for just a new chapter. Yeah. And honestly, it feels good. Like, if we were coming back and we were talking about Blake Shapen again, dude, I don't know, man. I might roll my eyes a little bit, not because of him, but just because of, like, is it Groundhog Day? Like, how many springs are we going to do this? So I'm excited about just something new, and I'm sure he feels the same way out in Starkville as they get ready for practices. He's probably like, yeah, it's good to not have kind of the same storylines around me. So best of luck to all of them, but Shapen and Dabney, of course, are the ones that you go, all right, those are the big missing holes. The linemen never really got entrenched the way that you were hoping for them to.
No, definitely not. And I know that you kind of look at those and go, oh, those are big losses, but at least you replaced them with Daquan Finn and with Michael Trigg. But like you mentioned, on the offensive line, getting guys like Daneker and Egbedian really is huge for this group moving forward. And the receivers as well, adding to that room. They need more veterans there. They need more proven commodities who have played in an air raid scheme. They got that with Hawkins and Bell. So, you know, cautiously optimistic about the offense. You know, how good's Daquan Finn? How good's the offensive line going to be after what was a dreadful year? And can the receivers take a step forward, I think, are the main question marks.
Yes, and then defensively, Matthew Pallage back as defensive coordinator, but we know that Dave Aranda has taken a big load of the duties for the defensive coordinator type roles and scheming and just the ins and outs that he's going to be a lot more involved in, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So in theory, not the defensive coordinator by title, but we'll have a lot of the defensive coordinator responsibilities, and he's going to be heavily involved. We know they hired Gary Patterson this offseason. Now, how involved he is at this point, I don't know. I feel like that's more of, right now, what we do know about it, more of an in-season focus on game planning and scouting and those types of things. But he's going to have some input, obviously, and that'll be interesting to hear from Dave Aranda when we get the opportunity to talk to him about that particular hire, as well as all the other hires they made throughout the staff this offseason. But Dave Aranda, bigger responsibility. You've got changes on that staff. You had to go and replace Christian Robinson, who ends up going to Alabama. You had to replace Juice Johnson as well on the defensive line. So how you feeling about this Baylor defense? And I guess I should touch on the last part, which is the personnel that comes back en masse. I mean, you mentioned Jarrell Boykin's retirement, but beyond that, pretty much everybody coming back. I know a lot of the secondary is what people got a taste of as far as the youth last year. Those guys return in full. Got some transfers a part of the mix. Can this Baylor defense take a big step forward? We won't know exactly until September, August, September, but are the pieces in place, I guess?
I would say I'm extremely optimistic about the back four. When you look at cornerback and safety, even star, now that you got Kendrick Simpkins in there from Western Kentucky, I feel really good about the secondary just in general. And I think that you look at guys like they brought in Cameron Jenkins. They already have Caden Jenkins and Carl Williams kind of locked in as guys who are proven commodities. I think you feel good about what Tevin Williams can bring to the table and Chateau Reed as older guys, maybe just taking one more step further, turning into, you know, solid players into good players, maybe even really good players. That would be the next step for those guys. Kendrick Simpkins, like I mentioned, a proven commodity at star. They've been really lacking that. They really need that. So if he can be that, it would be huge for this team. So again, feel really good about that. Safety, I know there's some question marks, but I think Devin Bobby, Devin Lemire, DJ Coleman, I think they have the parts, right? You know, Corey Gordon, maybe they move a cornerback to safety as well in the spring. We'll see on that. But I think in general, again, I feel pretty good about the secondary. But the front six, so the interior linebackers, the Mike and the Will, and then the front four on the defense line and Jack. I have concerns about, you know, how basically you need young guys to step up, or you need guys who are unproven to step up. And that's just a huge question mark for me, right? I mean, you got Matt Jones. You kind of know who Matt Jones is at this point. Maybe he can take a step forward, but outside of him, I mean, you got Keaton Thomas, who's a JUCO prospect who you brought in to play linebacker. He's going to be relied on heavily. You look at, you know, Jack, you got Garmin Randolph. Can he take a step forward? You added Texas Tech transfer Steve Linton to add some veteran experience as a pass rusher there. But, you know, are those guys going to really, either in Linton's case, turn his career around, and in Garmin Randolph's case, really reach his high ceiling? That's a question mark. And then outside of that, you know my feelings on nose tackle. I'm very worried about it currently. They're going to have to address that post-spring. Outside of that, you need young guys to emerge. Kyan Roberts-Day, Devontae Tesino, Brendan Bett. You know, you need these guys to emerge. Trey Wilson. And then, you know, you need Jackie Marshall to be healthy. He's coming in this year after missing all of last year. He's got the most talent in my eyes up front. Could take that huge leap. But is he going to be fully healthy already? You know, those are all question marks. A lot of reliance on young guys here.
Yeah, it is a very interesting time. There's just so much change and so much newness, coaching staff-wise, still trying to kind of even wrap my head around who's who, who's where, you know, and, like, who's in, who's out with the transfer portal. And so it's a lot of newness, but also a lot of carryover as well. I mean, this roster came back almost fully intact. Most of the changes came on the coaching staff, if anything, and then some tweaks here and there. But defensively, a lot of pressure, obviously, when your head coach is known for that, and that's been so much of a struggle for you. Dave Aranda putting the responsibility this season on his shoulders as much as anybody's, and so we start to see that journey, the next phase of it at least. They've been working out behind the scenes, but the next phase kicks off with spring ball. So that's just sort of a little, preview of sorts. You know, it's not like it's the season where we need to, there's going to be more change after this for the roster when it comes to additions and it comes to subtractions.
And that will come out today. I did want to mention that. The roster updates will come out today. So that's also something important to keep note of. And also attrition could have occurred. More attrition than what we've already mentioned. It really wouldn't surprise me at all.
And there will be more after spring. So this will be fluid and by no means what you'll be watching player for player when it comes to the start of the regular season. But this is a big part of the journey towards the season. So, yes, spring ball kicking off, and we will have full coverage all throughout the spring. There are 15 practices, which will be capped off by the green and gold game next month. But that'll be here before you know it. So, yeah, let's have fun and take advantage of the time that we've got. And the little windows of time will pass along whatever info that we do have. But stay locked into Sikkim365.com and particularly the premium section for your spring football coverage. Dave Aranda, year five, starting up, which is just crazy how time flies by, but a very important year for him and for the program. So looking forward to it. Ready for the mailbag?
Let's do it.
All right. Scotty B, the Baylor King, who has a better draw for this weekend in your opinion, Baylor men's basketball or Baylor women's basketball?
You know, I I got to go with the men's here. Again, you're playing on the road. I understand that Virginia Tech has some concerns. I know they have an injury, which you mentioned to Elizabeth Kitley. But I think in general, you're still having to play on the road, and that is really hard. The last 3 years, 5 seeds are 1-5 against 4 seeds in the women's basketball tournament. So it is hard to win that game in the second round if Baylor's able to get there. So I'm going to take the men's because they don't have to play on the road.
I'll take the men. I just think that they're a better team and has a better opportunity of beating teams seated below them or going toe-to-toe with teams that they come across that are potentially ranked higher. I just think the men are better suited to make a run towards the Sweet 16, whereas the women, the first weekend, I feel like they should get that first win. But beyond that, I don't know. I feel like with the men, though, I'm pretty confident in them getting to the Sweet 16 and getting into weekend number 2. I feel like that's not anything that's not probably being predicted by most, but I'm not so sure with the women. So, yeah, I would go with the men as far as having the better draw. And as you mentioned, Scotty mentions Elizabeth Kitley for Virginia Tech. She hasn't been ruled out, but is day-to-day, and coach not confirming whether it was a knee injury, but lower leg. So if they come across the Hokies, then that is something to keep in mind. But thanks for passing that along, Scotty. Useless Kim Degree. Craig brought up an interesting discussion on the show I'd like to ask you all about. When it comes to the location of the Big 12 basketball tournament, would you be in favor of a mix of different venues, staying in KC, or moving to a new single location? If you support moving it, where would you choose? Personally, KC is too far and expensive for me to get to, but I don't mind the location. The venue seems packed for most every game, and I'm sure the nightlife is great if your team wins. And this is a topic every year when the tournament rolls around, especially when you see Iowa State or K-State or Kansas packing it out. And we saw Iowa State just fans by the like 20,000 people. It wasn't quite, it was 17,000 or whatever at the final matchup against Houston in the championship game. It was like 17,000 of the 17,500 that were in the arena. And that's not throwing on extra, like that's legit what it was. It was crazy turnout. It's not anything necessarily new. We know that Iowa State travels really well. But what are your feelings on the big debate surrounding the turn? I know Ashley Hodges pointed out like it's an unfair advantage in so many ways. But there's also the argument of, well, it's a place where fans show up by, you know, the hundreds or the thousands, and it's proven a commodity at this point when it comes to attendance in KC, whereas I have been to the one in Dallas, and I know that can kind of be framed as like every game was empty, and that's not how it was. But you have an expanding footprint. You've got teams all over the place. You're about to have teams out in Utah and Arizona, so I can understand not wanting to have it positioned on this side of the country every single year. I'm open to it moving around, but I also understand the appeal of KC and it being like the flagship home for the Baylor or for the Big 12 men's basketball tournament. How do you feel about it?
I mean, I think first and foremost, it's an unfair advantage. I mean, it for sure is. Now, it's also a tournament and it's okay. I mean, it normally doesn't affect seeding too much. I mean, we just saw it with Iowa State. It didn't really do a whole lot for them at all. I mean, they ended up getting a worse draw than Baylor did by beating Baylor, which is frankly very surprising. But I think in general, though, I mean, adding these new teams, you know, you could convince me that Vegas could be pretty cool. I could get on board with that. I think Dallas could be pretty cool, a little more central for everyone. So I think moving it would be enticing, but I also think the history and the fact that it's been in KC for a long time and the fact that it draws so well, I think has to be very appealing and something the conference has to also take into account for.
Yeah, I think it's a proven commodity, so I understand wanting to keep it where it is, and that's where it will be. It's going to be there for the next several years. I think it was through 2031, the new contract that they have agreed to or signed will keep the tournament in KC. So it's a proven deal. I'm not anti it, but it definitely is a huge home court advantage for a select few schools. And I know the answer is, well, just travel more, have your fans travel more. Well, it's easier said than done. Not everybody has the massive enrollments or a massive amount of fans that travel that well. So that is definitely an advantage that we saw in full force for Iowa State this past weekend, and they took full advantage of it. So, yeah, It'll be interesting to see what they do post 2031. But then again, what does it even look like by then? Like, who's even in the conference? I mean, for all we know, like Louisville and Georgia Tech and like five other schools could be Big 12 schools by the time that rolls around the end of that contract. So for right now, it's in Kansas City, but they do a great job. So that's all right in my book. Appreciate the question. Master Pierce, MPH. Is Baylor baseball headed in the right track after starting the year a bit slow, or is Texas Tech baseball just lost in the shuffle, making us look serviceable?
I think you can't look at this as anything other than a good sign for Baylor baseball. Does that mean that they're going to have some magical run to end the year? I don't think so, but I do think it speaks well that this team is still fighting, still going out there and competing. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess after this weekend, you can say they're kind of turning it on the right track, but I need to see more before I officially say, okay, they've turned this fully around.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm ready to think that they're just on a huge upswing all of a sudden, but I do think it's very encouraging after how tough the start was. So, good series, still early, still a lot of games left to play, but I think that got you moving back towards the right track, and I want to see a little bit more before I start feeling like there's a pattern necessarily here, but that was shocking. When I saw the final score in game three, I was like, wow, they really went and took this series. So that was a huge lifter of spirits, I think, that was much needed for this team. But yeah, time will tell. Ultimately, I know Texas Tech fans are pretty sour and did not expect that whatsoever. So that was, I'm sure, fun for some Baylor fans to kind of swim in for a little while. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, definitely a good sign. If Love doesn't play during Colgate, would you count him out for the rest of the tourney? A warm-up game with him would be nice before throwing him back in.
I don't know that I'd count him out for the tourney if he doesn't play against Colgate or if he doesn't play against New Mexico, because it may just be a case of they want to give him another week. But I don't think it'd be a great sign. You would think after giving him this time off during the Big 12 tournament that he'd be ready to go for the Colgate game or at least the New Mexico game if he's going to play during the tournament.
I don't think that not playing against Colgate would mean he's out for the remainder of the tournament. I think if you can get him back in at any point, you bring him back. I mean, he might not be available this weekend or against Colgate, but if you're still playing in a couple of weekends and he's ready, like he's gonna be in the fold. So, yeah, I don't think it's like a make or break appearance coming up here in round number one. But yeah, you'd love the luxury of having him back in a warm up game, so to speak, man. But look, I know it's like 98% chance you win that game, but there's still always that chance. I mean, it's March Madness. It's the Sweet 16, so don't count your chickens before they hatch. But, yeah, you'd feel good about them advancing. And so if he can't play early, then there's always a chance he could return. Thank you for the questions. Bearcats, we'll wrap it up here. Who is the one player we really need to be on their A game for us to go on a run in the men's basketball tournament?
I continue to think this, I won't stop thinking this. I think the key for this team, and it's not necessarily scoring, it's not necessarily, you know, being the best scorer or the best defender on this team, but it's Ray J. Dennis. I mean, he has got to take care of the basketball, because normally when he takes care of the basketball and is able to make passes that are accurate and not passes that are inexplicable, this team usually does pretty well. And if he can do that and really manage this offense and be efficient passing the ball and getting this team where they need to be, then, you know, just I think that he's just such a key cog to this team. And I know no one wants to see him taking 20 shots in a game because they want to see Jacoby Walter, Eze Meese, Jalen Bridges. But if he can set the table for those guys effectively without turning the ball over, I think that is key for this team. So I think it's Ray J. Dennis.
Ray J. Dennis is a great candidate. Yeah, I think for all the reasons you mentioned, I know Jacoby Walter's got to have a bigger impact than he did the other night. But, I mean, you got a pair of super talented freshmen. You've got some veterans. You've got a great mix of guys, man. They can make a deep run. Jalen Bridges, I mean, the talent is there. The coaching is there. The draw seems to be there. Is the shot there? Is the defense there? You can't tell until they roll the ball out there. But I feel good about the men. I feel good about their draw and the path ahead of them. And I believe we'll be talking about them again after the first weekend. But as we've seen the last couple of seasons, that's easier said than done. But, yeah, he seems like a great candidate, Ray J. Dennis, for that choice there. So appreciate the questions in the mailbag this week. And, again, we'll be hot and heavy with continuing basketball coverage, both the men and the women, over on the website, sikkim365.com. Join the premium section if you haven't already, for also much more in terms of football coverage as spring drills start later on this afternoon. So it is a very busy week and a few weeks ahead, but this is the best time of year outside of football season. So definitely going to enjoy this. Hopefully you are as well. We appreciate you being along for the ride with us. Anything before we go here, Grayson?
No, I'll be at practice today, so that'll be something to keep an eye on. If you're a member of the Sikkim 365 Premium side, I'll have insider notes from today's practice and various news and nuggets from the day. So be on the lookout for that all spring. We'll have all kinds of content there. Kendall and Ashley and Jack are going to have all kinds of basketball content heading into this weekend, which will be a lot of fun. March Madness officially beginning. But outside of that, just be sure to check out the Premium side. Got all kinds of good news, information, and stories.
Yep, so there you go, Sikkim365.com, spring football, March Madness, and much more headed your way. And this podcast every Tuesday at around 11:15 right here on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim365 YouTube page. So if you haven't already, please hit that like button and that subscribe button as well. You can also catch us or catch me 3 to 6 each weekday over on the 365 Sports YT page. And we're closing in on 39,000, I think it is, and the march to 40 is on. Like to hit that number here pretty soon. So if you haven't already, please join that site or that page as well. And I think that about does it. For Garrett Ross behind the scenes, we appreciate your time, and we've got a lot more spring football and March Madness to talk about next week. But until then, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.